The Block Talk podcast started because of my passion for the property management industry. I wanted to start a conversation and add some value within the industry with a diverse range of people and professionals who can add something extra. As we start out, my aim is that the podcast offers some useful insight into a variety of views, opinions, thoughts, and foresights from our guests, who include business leaders and industry experts. If you enjoy the podcast and want to find out any other information, head on over to brianwelsh.co.uk. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Block Talk podcast with me, Brian Welsh. I've got a long bio to do here, so I'm going to have to read it. And I'm also going to have to apologize if Arthur comes in and starts barking at all. The dog is with me in the office today, so there's always the chance he is sleeping at the moment. Okay, so today our guest is Pat Phelan, Chief Customer Officer at GoCardless and MD of the UK and Ireland for GoCardless. Pat has a seriously impressive CV in the SaaS area, and we were just talking about it a minute ago, ranging from co-founding IntelliSys in 2000, where he served as head of customer success until March 2008. During his extensive career, he contributed his expertise whilst working at Bizarre Voice, Talio, and as a consultant at Robert Walters. Before his current position, Pat was chief customer officer at Brandwatch for 3 years. Pat is a father of two. He's a keen golfer, and so are his kids, we've just found out. And according to his ex-bio, is into hurling and is a self-confessed sports fanatic. We're delighted to have him on, and I'm going to actually probably ask him about rugby at some point.
By all means do. That is one topic I'm not scared to talk about anymore, although I'm still I'm still hurting from October. I still haven't quite gotten over it.
Yeah. Let's hope it's you that's hurting and not me come the 16th of March. Never mind. Yeah, anyway, how are you doing, Pat? Thanks for coming.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good. We'll get on to that. So hurling is like shinty, right?
Yes, it is. It's shinty's the derivation of hurling. So it was taken over to Scotland at the time. It's the closest there is to it, but it's the sport of kings. Nobody really knows much about it unless you're born where I was born, in which case you're born with a hurl in your hand. It's part of your DNA. If you don't play the game, there's something wrong with you.
Okay.
But yeah,
I did go through to the office earlier with Jax and Lindsay and say, what's hurling? I think I did know, but here it's when you're ill after a night.
Oh, I know. It's the same in Ireland, but in a different context. Yeah, exactly. So usually they go together. Sometimes they go together.
So can we start by talking about the landscape that you operate in, the world of payments, how it's changing, and where GoCardless fits into it and why it came about as well?
Yeah, so a bit to unpack there. So as I say, I'm Chief Customer Officer at GoCardless. We're an organization of about 800 people. We serve upwards of about 80,000 customers now at the moment, internationally, with a large chunk of that, you know, being based in the UK and I. So we're a direct bank payment organization. Like fundamentally, we help businesses to globally collect, manage their payments. And we've specialized in bank payments sort of explicitly, because that's our core. You know, there's a lot of other organizations who kind of choose to go down a different path when it comes to payments, but we've always really focused on, you know, what we do best, and that is bank payments, and really making it easy for our customers to do that, so they can focus on what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. In terms of the kind of evolution of it, from our perspective, there's probably two more significant areas of evolution that we've seen. I think the first one is, you know, it's not a surprise, but, you know, digital first as it comes to payments has really, you know, accelerated since the pandemic. Clearly the only way most of us could access anything over that period of time. And whilst, you know, adoption of direct debit in the UKI is and has been, you know, very mature over the years, what we've seen now is that people just, you know, expect to be able to do that in any environment that they operate in. And something, you know, historically that may have seemed as minor as, you know, requesting payments from a merchant's perspective, or as kind of almost like intuitive, has now become what we've seen sort of a core part of consumer expectation. Yeah. So like everything in the digital age, attention patience for something that doesn't fit what you need at that point in time has dramatically decreased. So we work a lot with merchants in many areas, not just necessarily the ones you would think of from retail and potentially utilities, but across all aspects really as to how we can optimize payments and in particular bank-to-bank payments for the consumers that they have, and how do we work with the ones that maybe don't use that to move them down that direction for obvious reasons. And then the second one really is just general payment visibility. We know that cash is king when it comes to running and operating a business, irrespective of whatever size it's at. And the need to be able to really clearly understand the predictability of cash flow, but also understand where there may be, gotchas in terms of failures, things like chargebacks, and the ability to really kind of forecast properly and understand that. So whilst direct debit's been, very consistent in terms of the underlying, rails that we operate on, we have seen it really kind of expand more in these particular areas. And then you throw just general cost on top of that. I think one of the themes we've all seen recently is the cost of and the reliability around credit cards, particularly from a recurring perspective, has definitely been challenged quite a bit, because it is we selfishly and I think still accurately call it sort of it is a tax on merchants. It's a kind of a hidden tax that is just there that has to be paid in order to engage with that mode of payment that we're very passionate about making sure that we can provide alternatives that offer the same in terms of choice, but really enhanced cost savings, reductions, visibility, and transparency as well. So a lot's changed, definitely. I've been here 5 years now, and it's been really interesting just to watch that evolution. And as I say, more so from the breadth rather than the depth, if that makes sense. So there's a lot of verticals that we would work with, a lot of customers that we would work with, where it's always been the case, and really it's more of a case of challenging them and innovating around that. But now we've seen a lot more organizations kind of come to us looking to be more aggressive in terms of how they think about particularly collections and payments generally.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, we'll come on to this a wee bit later, but I suppose from CPL's point of view, the challenge is, I mean, it's the way of the world now, right? You want to go and pay by direct debit, you want to choose the day of the month that you want to pay that direct debit as a consumer. And up to now, certainly in the property management world, it's tended to be the property management company would maybe have three dates of the month you could pick to pay by direct debit, which I guess was the norm for most companies a long time ago. And the solutions that we had, certainly, I mean, you could do it, but it was a massive headache from an admin point of view. So I guess GoCardless takes that away.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, as we've kind of, evolved our proposition, and as it's expanded, in addition to the core direct debit collection kind of mode, those are areas that we've really gone very kind of aggressively into. So once you move beyond the kind of active efficiently and from a cost savings perspective, being able to collect direct debits en masse at high volumes, then you're kind of moving into the world of, okay, how can we do it more predictably? Yeah. How can we do it more transparently? And that's where, some of our other product offerings, such as, Success Plus, which is intelligent retry capability that just, ultimately will tell you the best time to take a collection, depending on, multiple variables across our entire kind of payments intelligence landscape. So it's pretty cool stuff, and it has a very material impact. And it's very tangible, which is what I've always liked about kind of operating in this space. It's there's not many hypotheticals around payments. It's a pretty straightforward process. It either you get it or you don't, and you get it efficiently, and it costs you more or it doesn't. And I think that's what I like about my world, is we get to stand in front of people and you live and die by the success, really, you know, and it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Okay. So to illustrate how GoCardless works, can you walk us through a case study? Isn't it?
Yeah. There's a couple. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we have a massively expansive sort of base of customers, but, you know, one in particular that probably would be somewhat relevant. There's an organization in France called Matera. They're a startup that helps homeowners manage their rental investments. So it's a kind of managing 7,000 plus co-ownership customers. Their model is to give the property owners effectively control that by outsourcing the property management, they're saving time and money, which is effectively what the overarching value prop for ourselves is. But they want to be able to pass on those cost savings. The only way they could pass those cost savings on ultimately was by automating bank debit, to be able to save on, you know, the core aspects of admin, reduce payment failures. And ultimately, because the payment failures or the payments were being pulled directly from bank accounts. So, you know, effectively 100% of their payments now, their French payments, come via GoCardless. And with their invoicing and payment collection flow fully automated as well. So we were able to obviously, you know, ingest that seamlessly, give them that visibility that they needed and wanted. And we were also, I think, you know, one of the added benefits was being able to replicate that model as they expanded into different regions. So, you know, the actual heavy lifting was already done. So really it was a case of kind of, you know, plug and play as they look to, you know, different countries to develop out the same model. Okay. And you know, we've seen it benefit sort of all sorts of businesses, really. From the more traditional modes of collection to, you know, anything that really falls into that sort of recurring world. One of the areas that we'll probably touch on later on as we think about the future of bank payments, you know, you may or may not be aware, you know, open banking now is a very significant opportunity that certainly most of our customers need to be thinking about taking advantage of over the next couple of years. And, you know, we've now seen that start to really evolve into something, you know, very meaningful in terms of the ability to collect one-off payments, you know, instantly. But again, from an account-to-account perspective, so you still have the benefits of the transparency, the predictability, the cost saving, but it kind of moves more into that different profile of, you know, things like rent arrears or, you know, cohorts of payments that need to be chased down that can actually be dealt with immediately on the spot, as opposed to a recurring direct debit payment. Kind of expanding out that ability as well. So, yeah, so they're kind of, you know, most of the areas that we look at and operate in, and the use cases, again, from your, you know, customer's perspective for both a direct debit proposition plus the ability to deal with, you know, one-off outlier payments. Are really the ones that we, you know, they're bread and butter to us. And, you know, we see a lot of value, a lot of very tangible value coming from that.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to ask, I don't know if you've already touched on this, but how does that going to work, GoCardless, and how is that going to benefit property management companies? I mean, the CPL platform has about just over 400,000 kind of homes or units on that platform. Payment of that is a mixture of direct debit, credit card. I mean, gosh, probably still check and probably still cash in some respects, although, or no payment at all. Which is the bit that we're trying to fix, obviously.
Yeah.
And certainly from CPL's point of view, the instant bank payment throughout the credit control process of, you know, being on the end of a phone to someone and being able to say, I'll just ping you a link if you want to pay it.
Yeah.
That is, you know, is hugely beneficial, you know, whether that's text or whatever we're going to do, or whatever, however you do that. But how do you see that working in this specific market?
Yeah, it's definitely an area, a sector that we've seen a lot of adoption of over the last, probably I would say 18 months, and a lot of interest from. As with any organization like ourselves, you kind of, you know, you grow up with a with a core group of customer types and user needs that kind of get you to a certain point. And then as you evolve and feature sets evolve, you open up that to lots of different areas. And definitely this segment is one that I'm having a lot more conversations about and around, in terms of, you know, what the proposition looks like, what do we need to be thinking about as an organization as we look to get deeper and more broad in how we support customers like yours. Yeah. You know, but ultimately, you know, when it comes to that general area, I guess, the core kind of proposition from our perspective is that really, you know, payments in theory should make up as few kind of client interactions as possible for, I would imagine, your customers, given that, you know, the real focus is presumably around improving kind of the client experience and making sure that as little time as possible is spent on these kind of, in some cases, you know, areas where friction can arise, I guess. And yeah, I think that's where we really try and play as significant a part as we can, because, you know, our job is to make that as seamless as possible. Fundamentally, like at a core level, our job is to make that process, to make that experience as seamless as possible for both your consumer and your customers. And, you know, when we talk about the difficulties around, you know, just payments in general, around people's finances, around the challenges that people have had over the last kind of 12 to 24 months, particularly when it comes to, you know, just cost of living, you know, yeah, we're very kind of sensitive of the implications of not getting that right. So that to me is the kind of the core kind of proposition that we have, that we get our customers paid on time in a fashion that allows them to be very clear about what that looks like from a cash flow and a timeline perspective. And we also do that in a way that provides the best possible experience for their customers. Yeah. And then from a cost perspective, I just, you know, you can't sort of get away from the fact that the more we can get our customers engaging with account to account, and the more we can offer them the feature set, such as, you know, instant bank pay through open banking, and as that evolves in a way that is faster, cheaper, and just more reliable, then it just allows scale and it allows expansion without the conflict or the constriction of cost. And we're seeing that again more and more as we kind of engage in our customers. So the total cost of ownership of a payments, you know, platform is something, or a payments channel is something that we talk a lot about here, because it isn't simply about the transaction cost,
yeah,
or
yeah,
the credit card fee. It's about everything that goes on around it. Like, there's, yeah, people who run collections, there's people who take time to chase down delinquent payments. There's, you know, and all of this stuff adds up to a cost that when we kind of engage with customers like yours, we do really challenge them to think about that in more of a in its entirety, and then multiply that out as they see their own business scaling. Because clearly, yeah, if it's not dealt with early, it's going to be significantly impactful. So that's kind of the main areas that I definitely spend a lot of my time on. And like I say, it's interesting, this sector generally, is definitely one that, you know, we're starting to develop a you know, quite a specialization in, because it is what we do is so at the core of everything that certainly your customers are trying to grapple with and get their hands around.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that grows with scale for a property management company is you need people to look after property, right? I mean, that's, yes, never going to disappear, right? You know, and that's service. But if you then have to scale the whatever you recovery team or whatever you want to, yeah, call them, credit control team, then you know, that's an added expense that if you're managing to collect that collect money and get payment plans in place or find solutions to get that in the door, then that doesn't necessarily need to grow at the same rate of your portfolio.
Absolutely. And you know, we have such tangible kind of examples of organizations who've kind of achieved that through the focus on how do they reduce the human dependency, I guess, or the the noise that comes with areas or like, payment collection, irrespective of what the channel is, as they scale, as they grow. And then you throw kind of geos into that, and you throw different markets into that, and different payment rails and different currencies. And all of a sudden it kind of gets, exponentially bigger. So that's kind of at the core of what we do. And I think, with the addition and the expansion into open banking and the ability to do that faster, which fundamentally and more securely, then, that's a pretty compelling kind of proposition that we're finding.
Yeah, no, got you. So when it comes to choosing a payment provider, what are the three things you'd say property management companies should look out for?
So I think the first one, there's some that are obvious and some maybe less so. I touched on total cost of ownership a second ago. If I was in the shoes of, anybody listening to this and making an assessment in terms of, what their payment ecosystem is going to look like, total cost of ownership is really, really critical in this area, because there are so many incremental costs associated with the motions that surround the collection of payments, and the scenarios in which you collect payments are very different from an effort versus reward perspective, I guess. So when we think about total cost of ownership, we think about the entire environment that surrounds the collection of payments. And that's where you start to see the real cost as opposed to the transactional cost. So then you start to see what matters. Then you start to see about predictability. Then you start to see about, the ability to scale without having to throw bodies against it. And the second one is the actual, the experience itself. When we think about experience, we think about it both in terms of the payer experience, which obviously for your customers is going to be the primary consideration. Does it work? Does it work well? Is it frictionless? Are there multiple different ways to do it? So going back to the core direct debit payment plus the ability to pay by instantly by bank. Yeah. And do they feel that it's fundamentally safe? And we talked earlier on about our brand in the UKI. We are a brand that, if you don't know us, you use us. But there's a lot of people who are starting to know who we are as a brand as well. If you've ever had a kid going to Scouts, for example, you would have seen us come up multiple times. So we operate on such a scale that I think the credibility and the security that comes with the years of experience that we've had and the lessons we've learned, we know what a good customer experience looks like. So we do a lot of guiding. We do a lot of sort of consultation with customers, both, yeah, digitally and in person. So the second one I would suggest, and I would urge people to think about, is that customer experience. You don't want too many payment providers. You don't want them to be ones they don't know or they haven't come across. And ultimately, you want it to be safe and secure and just feel like it's a natural process for customers. And then the third one is more the obvious one, I guess, given our conversation, but I think integration and the ability for the payment platform and the payment provider to really deeply integrate into whatever, overarching tech stacks your customers, run. Because again, when that doesn't work, it goes back to my previous point around customer experience. The payer experience may be fine, from a UX perspective on your website or in your platform. But again, if it's not seamless from an integration perspective, it falls down pretty quickly. So again, we spend, we've spent years basically trying to perfect our API to be able to directly integrate. We've direct integrations with multiple finance platforms. And so as you think about that, look at, from your customer's perspective, look at where it's going to play within your own kind of technical ecosystem, as well as just whether or not it's the right provider for you based on what you need as well. So they'd be kind of the three core areas from my perspective. And I think the first two are the ones that we were, are a little more nuanced, I guess, than the technical integration, but have a massive kind of impact on your customer experience and the actual ease and effort involved in rolling it out.
Yeah. I have to say the integration from what I've heard has been fairly straightforward for us, certainly. And it does, I mean, good. It is very manually intensive, the way that it works just now. So actually doing that integration and getting Success Plus and instant bank payments and all of that sort of stuff involved as well, which was really good. And in fact, we have a number of clients taking it on, and we released
good.
It
recently.
So no, it's good. It is good.
Well, my job is to make sure that, you know, customers like you and your customers feel that way. You know, it's an evolving space. It's just moving at such a pace. And, you know, I think one of the areas that again, we're finding a lot of our customers are spending probably a lot more time than perhaps they used to, certainly at a certain scale, is just also the confidence of innovation, you know? And that's, I guess, the beauty of being a kind of a platform technology like ours, is that we overlay lots of things, but we try to innovate it and make it as simple as possible to actually access those things that beforehand are not, you know, there's an effort in doing it outside of like a go-cardless platform.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, let's face it, that's what we're here for, right? That's what our job is. Our job is to innovate. Our job is to make our customers' lives easier. You know what I mean? And help them to run their businesses, because they don't want that hassle, and they want slow software. They don't want software that doesn't innovate, doesn't allow them to progress, and all of these sort of things. And ultimately, I mean, that from my point of view, the ultimate person I'm trying to satisfy is my customer's customer.
Yeah.
So that they make sure the journey that my customer is providing to their customer is the right one. And you know, and we spend many, many, many hours in each month talking about what we can do with our products to make that happen.
Yeah. Okay. And as similar to ourselves, we're trying to be led by customers as much as we possibly can. But no, it's an exciting area, and it's definitely one that's going to change a lot over the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So where do you see the future of payments going? We've obviously got everything you're doing just now. We've got instant bank payments. I always kind of, certainly within my business, within CPL, we think about a 3-year plan, 5-year plan.
Yeah.
So if our listeners were planning the next kind of 3 to 5 years, what do you think it would look like? And what steps do property management companies need to take to keep up with the changes? What do you think is going to happen in the world of payments?
Yeah, so like I said, you know, when I talk about kind of innovation and the need to just, you know, make that a core part of an assessment of any partner that certainly your customers are going to look at over the next couple of years, the first point I would make is make sure you kind of make the concern about how that innovation is going to manifest itself from a technical perspective, the problem of people like me, as opposed to you having to figure it out 15 different ways with, you know, 20 different providers. And that's definitely something that I think is super valuable. That's really why we're here, to make sure that we can innovate, but do it in a way that, you know, makes it easy for our customers. I think, you know, we talked about open banking earlier on, and it's really difficult to get away from the fact that it's definitely, you know, the most significant kind of evolution, you know, in the payments landscape for a long, long time. You know, it fundamentally, at a core level, enables money movement and sharing of things like account information with the holder's consent, obviously, between banks and financial institutions. And because of this kind of opening up of this type of access for people like ourselves, the innovation and the opportunity that kind of affords has just, you know, will grow exponentially in terms of proposition, in terms of, we've already seen it like even at a basic level, you know, the ability just to pay instantly from bank to bank now, comparable to even 2 or 3 years ago, is just, I mean, think about how you pay, it's literally night and day. I mean, it's even in the industry, it still surprises me sometimes when I go on a particular app and, you know, a payment is involved, like how utterly seamless it can be. And it's always been the perceived notion that, you know, banks and bank to bank, you know, it was always kind of more of a, a different profile of payment that it was suitable for, which is why direct debit was obviously, and recurring direct debits was obviously so popular. But that's changed now dramatically with open banking. So from that perspective, like, you know, there's no real, you know, added friction for consumers when it comes to open banking. It is growing, you know, exponentially really over the last kind of couple of years, and it's not even really started. You know, we have some huge success stories early doors, like, you know, HMRC, I think, you know, I mentioned, is one of the organizations now that have launched kind of pay by bank for paying everything, you know, tax related. We've just gone live with Just Giving, the donation, okay. The charitable platform.
Yep.
About four months ago now, I think, and you know, our instant bank pay has effectively replaced their credit card payment collection process. And, you know, you can imagine for an organization like that, when you cut a couple of percent off from a fee perspective, it's the volume that they do, it's a significant contributor to being able to add to how much of the donation gets to the right people. So, you know, things like that have really opened the door. And from your customer's perspective, you know, there's probably a couple of things to start to think about as it relates to that. You know, the mix, the bank-to-bank mix is certainly one of them. So the ability to not just operate in the world of recurring direct debit subscription, but also then to have the option from a one-off perspective is super powerful. You know, the speed of that is now, I mean, in some cases, it's effectively instant. At worst, it's within, you know, that working day. Yeah. In terms of the payment processing speed. And ultimately, as you get more into the account information side, it allows you to have more confidence through understanding the account that the money is coming from better, because part of open banking is not just payment initiation, it's account information. So you have the two kind of threads there of being able to make the payment more efficient and faster, but also being more knowledgeable about where that payment is coming from. Yeah. So account ownership, for example, you know, yeah, is the individual who says they are the owner of this account, the actual owner of this account. And, yeah, you know, that's just, you know, again, game changing in terms of payments are concerned. You know, if you think about predictability, again, failures, and, you know, the net of it all is, it's literally, you know, obviously the it's evolving fast, but because it's bank to bank, in most cases, it's up to 50% cheaper than payment by card, and right. And you know that's like, I don't always want it to go back to that, but it's hard to get away from that when you think about you're a, you know, a customer of yours, and you're thinking about their customers. You know, when you have the combination of a much broader payment mix, so you're catering to a wider preference as it relates to bank to bank, so recurring and instant. You have a customer experience that is pretty seamless, that integrates well into your existing payment tech stack, and it's, you know, compelling from a cost perspective. It's very difficult not to look at, you know, open banking as soon as possible in reality, because the sooner people kind of adopt it in their collections kind of operating rhythm, the quicker they're just going to see huge differences on all of those kind of variables.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I mean, certainly it is gaining a lot of interest, certainly from our clients. So thinking about that, so GoCardless, CPL software, that connection, are there upcoming features or innovations that you're excited about from that point of view, or?
Yeah. So we've launched IBP Instant Bank Pay. I want to say about maybe 12, 14 months ago now. Like, you know, live, you know, into the market, you know, fully stood up, and we've really seen that take off. And the proposition for us with Instant Bank Pay was in isolation of direct debit. In other words, like accounts, you know, the delinquent payments, that credit control. but also the proposition of both. So IBP is a one-off first payment, and then direct debit is an ongoing, you know, subscription. So if you think about a gym membership, for example, yeah. where, you know, they can now use bank to bank for the entire kind of customer journey. So you pay your one-off upfront payment and revert back to us. As part of open banking, outside of, you know, areas like instant bank pay, the next major real like tangible benefit we're going to see pretty quickly is around what they term variable recurring payments. So variable recurring payments is effectively the ability for a customer to collect from one of their customers on a regular basis within an agreed bound of value. So for example, an energy bill is a consumption-based energy bill is a good example, where it varies on a month-to-month basis. And as direct debit stands right now, you know, one of the limitations of direct debit to some degree is the amount is fixed. And if you want to change that amount, you set up a different direct debit, which is why, you know, a lot of energy companies build up excesses and they use that excess then over the heavy periods. But we're moving now into what's being kind of coined as variable recurring. So we're kind of all over that for a couple of reasons. At the moment, from a legislative perspective, which is where open banking, you know, has come from in terms of governments really trying to push and force banks to become more innovative and to open up more to organizations like ourselves. At the moment, variable recurring operates in a very limited context. So right now, it's what we call kind of me-to-me payments. So for example, if you have a mortgage offset account with your current account, you can move money on almost like a daily basis with one of your banks to limit like the actual the interest that you pay off a mortgage based on what's in your current account. So that's effectively what VRP is. That amount can change daily, it can change weekly. But you've given authority for the bank to do that, and they don't have to ask you again unless the amounts change beyond the bounds that you set. Now, that's going to move into the world of commercial, whereby that's going to be available just across the board. And when you think about that, you know, in the context of your customers, and as your customers are thinking about that, you know, straight away now, we're going to be operating in an environment where, you know, the flexibility from the flexibility that's afforded to our customers to be able to vary that payment depending on what the service and the product is, without the user experience being clunky or being, you know, too kind of overbearing to some degree, is pretty significant in a lot of segments and a lot of sectors. And, you know, that's one of the areas that we are, you know, very, very excited about, because we know, like, you know, how important recurring payments are to the businesses that we work with. But as an evolution of that, I think variable recurring, commercial variable recurring payments is going to take on a whole different sort of dimension. So once you've got that, you've then got that plus the ability to transact on a one-off basis, both through open banking, both with the cost savings that affords, the speed that affords, and the ability to really compete with, you know, different payment methods that up to this point have always kind of touted to a large degree banks' inability to be quick when it comes to payments. Now that's gone, and the cost is 50% less. It's pretty compelling. So that's one of the key things that we push our own customers on a lot to think about.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting, because if you think about the property management world in England, it's very, or more often than not, here is your service charge budget. If you pay for it on a monthly basis, then it's set fee every month.
Yeah.
In Scotland, it's a huge amount of property factoring still in Scotland. I'm going to say there's maybe a West Coast, East Coast divide here, because it is maybe more predominantly the West Coast, is on an arrears basis. So, you know, your bill on a quarterly basis does change. Now, our customers do have the ability to do quarterly variables, but they have to tell the customer, obviously,
yes,
14 days beforehand that it's or whatever that rule is, 10 working days, 14 days beforehand, that the number is changing and it's X. So if you have a banding that you can go for, then that becomes far easier to do. And actually probably something that people will find them easier, because then you've got constraints of, oh shit, I didn't get my, and sorry, I do swear on here, so I apologize.
Don't worry.
I haven't managed to get my invoices done in time and out the door. So suddenly I'm not within that 10 days to tell them. 14. So there's a problem. Do you know what I mean? So that constraint is lifted, I guess, if you've got a banding there. So yeah,
it's
hugely useful for people who want to pay.
And the other thing that's really interesting is just how propositions are going to change based on the ability to do this. So you know, there's a lot of ways. There's probably a lot of aspects of how we operate and how certainly our customers operate that we're always kind of almost like bounded by the ability of the everything around them to actually execute against it. Like this completely changes it. And I'm very excited about the fact that I do believe this is going to put a lot of power in the hands of our merchants to be able to provide and it's more on them than it is kind of, you know, trying to figure out how to work around, you know, constraints. So I think that's going to be
if you just look at utilities, which you mentioned earlier, and I mean, okay, the way utilities work is actually is quite good, because you obviously spend more on heat and light in the winter than you do in the summer. But actually, if someone wants to say, no, I don't, I want to just pay you what I've used, then direct debit doesn't work for them just now. There's very far and wide. Connotations of that,
massively, and that's what excites me. And I think, you know, the banks have you know, they I think in most cases they've accepted the fact that, you know, you can't fight innovation, you've got to provide, you know, customers with what they want, and you know, with organizations like ourselves being, you know, we were pretty heavily involved in the creation of the overall open banking strategy with the government. You know, you've got organizations who just know what they see on a daily basis, and they know where those gaps are and what customers are looking for. So yeah, they're kind of the core areas, and you know, our job is to innovate that into our platform so that your customers and people like yourself can benefit from it and think more strategically about it rather than how the hell do we make it work kind of thing. You know, that's kind of where we come in.
Absolutely. No, that's brilliant. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about from a direct debit point of view? Because we do need to talk about rugby before you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, look, all I would say is, you know, we're here to help any of your customers who want to discuss it further. You know, there's various stages of innovation, and, you know, we don't talk to customers who know what their open banking strategy is. We talk to customers who've heard about it or who've read about it and want to start to understand and think about it. And, you know, I would really urge anyone listen to this. As I say, this is not a case of done and dusted when you talk to a company like Ocardless. It's quite the opposite, actually. Our job is to help you on that journey. So please do take advantage of it.
Cool. And our kind of contact within your organization's Fiacra, who we met actually at a conference last year.
Another good Irish man.
And he's always in contact. Yeah, he's a good Irish man. And he's always in contact with Tom, our BDM. So
good.
They do kind of joint demos on this sort of stuff as well. So that's great.
Good.
Okay, right.
Good
we
to
need
hear.
To talk about rugby before, seeing as we're in the middle of the Six Nations. I've actually, I've got a dinner tonight at the Wooden Spoon, I think, in the Hilton. And I've got our properties as a charity dinner, and that my a guy who I know has invited me to. But then we have our Property Managers Association, which is the kind of the dinner for the association, which all our clients are a member of, which we sponsor as well. And then on Saturday morning, I'm on the 6:40 to Heathrow, which gets in at 8:10, and then I'm on the 9:10 to Rome to watch Scotland. Although after last weekend, I'm trying to work out whether Italy are really, really good or France just played last weekend. That's a bit of a worry. But if it hadn't been for that sort of ball that was on the ground, miraculously not being on the ground against France, and us getting past Italy, that could have been the 16th of March could have been a big deciding game.
I was honestly gutted. I was watching that with my son on a big screen. I can't remember where we were, but we were watching it like as it was, the camera was, you know, that we're doing the TMO. And honestly, it was it was plain as day. I was gutted, absolutely gutted, because I think you guys are on a tear, and honestly, I think it's the banana skin for us. Scotland are definitely, if Scotland can keep it together for the first 20-25 minutes, I think you've got a good shot at Ireland.
In Dublin on St. Patrick's Day,
it's a tough ask. It's a tough ask, but it's an interesting one. The Welsh game the England game was a great game, but I mean, it was poor quality, and they're going to have to really level it up now. But yeah, it's fascinating. But like I say, I'm still, I was so upset at the world. I was at the final in Paris, and we had our tickets booked and we were all ready for it, and we didn't show up. That was very upsetting.
Yeah.
But
Well,
it's the hope that kills when you're an Irish rugby fan.
Well, do you know, I've been a season ticket holder at Murrayfield for, maybe 10 years, I'm not sure if it's even longer than that. I don't know. The first few years was a donation and you just went for the beer. But actually, the last few years has been really, really pretty exciting.
I have to say.
Any predictions then for the 16th?
Well, no, honestly, I think it's going to be a lot tighter than people think. I do think it's going to be tight, but I cannot see Ireland slipping up. I mean, the I've never seen anything like the machine like kind of engine that's been built now. We've had so much thrown at us that we would historically have slipped up, and we just never have. So I think it's going to be an impossible task. So yeah, I would
agree with you, but it won't be an email if it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, if anybody beat us, I would like it to be Scotland.
They're definitely
my second team. I'm a big Finn Russell fan.
It's actually my youngest son's 21st birthday that day, and we are going to a pub just along the road from the office as a family gathering at 7 o'clock. But there's 17 of us in the pub to watch it beforehand. So I'm not actually convinced that any of us will be sober on the way to his bar.
Good. Well, they're the days he'll remember.
I know. That has been fabulous. Thanks very much.
Awesome.
Really informative. Okay. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much. Cheers.